I get to start with introducing Melinda Wharton, our first speaker. Melinda is well known to everybody in the room here. She's the Deputy Director of the National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Diseases, and she's currently serving as the temporary assignment as the Director of the Immunization Safety Office, helping the safety office move from the office of the director at CDC into a division at CDC. It's a very important transition, and Melinda is providing very important leadership during that transition time. We're eager to see her come back to the National Center, which I think will be fairly soon. But everybody here knows Melinda, and we'd love to give her a warm welcome for her speech.
Thank you. In thinking about what to title this, and actually the session organizers gave me a nice title in the program book, but I decided to change it a little bit because fundamentally what we're doing with the immunization schedule is doing more than one thing at a time. And that is, by definition, a complicated thing. And I think what you're going to be hearing in this session is some exploration of that complexity, what the implications of it are, and how we all need to try to handle it. Now, the immunization schedule is, as Lance mentioned in the introduction, a tool for public health that he often calls a prescription for the nation. It's also a summary of thousands of pages of individual vaccine recommendations. It's a standard of care. It's a quick reference for clinicians, something they can stick on the wall or on the refrigerator. But it's also become a lightning rod for people who've got concerns about too many vaccines too soon. Now, the schedule that I just showed you, the one for this year, this is of course updated regularly, but the first of the harmonized schedules that was published jointly by the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, the American Academy of Physicians, and the American Academy of Family Physicians was developed first in 1994 and published in 1995. It's not that there weren't immunization schedules before that. The individual organizations did have schedules, but this was the first combined schedule that was really developed jointly and approved by the different recommending groups, and it was then published. Since then, on at least an annual basis, this schedule has been updated and published. And it represents the recommendations of the AAP, the AAFP, and the ACIP, and it's become a powerful tool to keep both public and private sectors in sync on immunization recommendations. Now, we may look at the schedule and see, great opportunities for prevention, all these diseases that can now be prevented in very young children, but other people look at the schedule and see too many too soon. These are some summary data from the Health Style Survey, which our Office of Communications and NCIRD has been looking at in collaboration with the Immunization Services Division to identify parental concerns. And you all have heard these before. There's concern about the pain associated with receiving so many shots. There's concerns about too many vaccines in one doctor's visit, concerns about fevers, vaccine ingredients, and so on. So even though we see the schedule as something that prevents disease and keeps the child safe, that same schedule is something that causes parents concerns. So how is the schedule put together? Well, in effect, the schedule is a summation of individual vaccine recommendations. And these are the recommendations of the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, which makes evidence-based recommendations based on the licensed indications and schedule, the burden of disease to be prevented, and all these other factors that are listed on the slide. One of the factors is the cost effectiveness of the vaccine, or what I've called on the slide, good use of public funds. The schedule represents a summation of these individual vaccine recommendations, including our longstanding recommendation for simultaneous administration of vaccines. So why do we give vaccines at the ages we do? Well, what we're trying to do is to provide protection from vaccine-preventable diseases at the earliest stage possible, which may be in the first months of life, or it might be in the second year of life after maternal antibody is pretty reliably gone, or it might be before periods of increased risk, which is why we give the meningococcal conjugate vaccine before young adolescents enter that period of increased risk in high school. We give vaccines concurrently with other vaccines to coincide with the established schedule of well-child visits, and the ages for which vaccines are recommended in the schedule reflects the ages at which the vaccines were given in clinical trials and is generally consistent with product labeling. Not completely, absolutely, totally, but generally consistent. Now, vaccination practice is strongly focused on avoiding missed opportunities. And simultaneous immunization has long been a recommended immunization practice as one strategy to avoid missed opportunities. This really has been a major focus in the program since at least the measles resurgence of 1989 through 1991. That's at least when I remember it becoming so prominent as a strategy to avoid missed opportunities. And of course, the measles resurgence was associated with failure to vaccinate children on time. And avoidance of missed opportunities was one strategy to make sure that we did get children vaccinated on time. That said, there are some issues that one could possibly identify being associated with the immunization schedule. There are generally data available on concurrent administration of vaccines at the time of licensure. But we should acknowledge that there won't be data on every combination, on every series of vaccines that might be administered together. And the studies are sized to look at the immune response to vaccination, not really to look at vaccine safety. There could be interference between concurrently administered vaccines. This is something that's theoretically possible, but in reality, it's not been frequently observed. But there is the recognized need for spacing of live virus vaccines. That's something we know needs to be done, but in terms of concurrent administration, there's not really been much interference observed. There could be safety or efficacy issues associated with concurrent or antecedent exposure to vaccine components. And an example of this would be the diphtheria toxoid-containing vaccines, where we know that the meningococcal conjugate vaccine contains diphtheria toxoid, and so there could be issues with giving the adolescent formulation TDAP vaccine following Menactri that might be different if you didn't give them in that order. And then finally, there's the issue of cumulative exposure to vaccine components. And again, this doesn't appear to have any hazards associated with it, but it was this whole concern, of course, that led to the joint statement in 1999 calling for the removal of thimerosal from vaccines. So those are things that could be identified as issues, although again, generally, they don't appear to be. Now, this is an example of the kind of concurrent administration data which generally are available at a time a new vaccine is licensed. The Rotavirus vaccine is GlaxoSmithKline's rotavirus vaccine that was licensed last year. It's now recommended for routine use in young children. And in the package insert cited a study of 284 healthy infants who were randomized into two groups. All of the children received GlaxoSmithKline's PDRIX vaccine, which is a combination, of course, of DTaP, hepatitis B, and IPV, along with the licensed pneumococcal conjugate vaccine and ACT-HIB at 2, 4, and 6 months of age. And then one group had co-administration with Rotarix, and the other had separate administration. The study was sized to look at was the immune response to Rotarix the same, and also the immune response to the other vaccines that were administered. And the study demonstrated that there wasn't a problem with the immune response in these children. So that's the kind of information that there is. And this is very important information for immunization practice, but it's also a limited number of children. And this really isn't a safety study. This is a study that was designed to look at immune response. There also is the potential for an augmentation in fever with simultaneous administration of vaccinations. This is a slide from our colleagues in the Immunization Safety Office looking at the Vaccine Safety Data Link, which showed if you look at the difference between the magenta line and the blue, and the two blue lines, that there actually is a little bit more fever seen with simultaneous administration of MMR and varicella vaccine than with the single vaccines. Now, there actually is a sort of emerging scientific field about how to look at more than one thing at a time that I think is promising to help us think about some of these complicated issues. Rapid advances in multiple fields of biology have made it possible to study complex biological reactions at the cellular level, and these new systems biology approaches are beginning to be applied to questions about vaccines. This seems to me to be very exciting because if we think about what really is a complex system that needs complex answers, it probably is this one. And again, I don't think that the data we have suggests that there's a problem with the immunization schedule, but in terms of really being able to understand what happens with simultaneous administration, I think it's very exciting that these new tools are now available, which may help us better understand those issues. So where we are right now is I think we do need to acknowledge that when we do want more than one thing at a time, it's complicated, and complicated is hard. So we need to help immunization providers help parents deal with a very complex set of decisions. And in spite of whatever uncertainty there is, I still believe that vaccination is the best way to protect children from 16 vaccine-preventable diseases. But it's great to have the opportunity this morning to hear from Dr. Taylor and Dr. Offit about how to address some of the complexity surrounding this. Thank you.